So there is no man who's earning all the money.
Yeah.
If anything, there are people who are losing money left, right, and center, and we're very soon not going to have a film industry that looks like it does now. There's almost no money in it.
Traveling New Zealand, featuring and celebrating amazing women in tech all across the North Island and South Island, I came across James with Werewolf, and man, was he helpful in connecting me to the women in tech community in order to enable me to empower these incredible women to move forward. So just passionate about women in tech.
My name is James Burns. I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Werewolf, the app for venture tourism operators. I've had the pleasure of working for a lot of really smart women, and both in tech and outside of tech. And it's just generally been my experience over the last 20 years that there's not nearly enough women's voices in leadership roles in tech companies. And so I just think it's important that we have that sort of voice. Myself, I have two young daughters who today are 4 and 6. And I want to make sure that when they get to an age where they're ready to start their first company, that they have all the opportunity and support they need. Werewolf makes it easy for adventure tourism operators, everything from skydiving companies and bungee operators to jet boating and rafting companies, to go paperless, to handle the guests from arrival all the way through departure, check them in through a really beautiful custom-branded iPad app, ask them a lot of key questions, take that data to build a customer marketing database. Werewolf was recognized by Deloitte in their Fast 50 Awards for this year as the rising star one to watch. And as we move to the United States, it's really important that we continue to capitalize on the kind of growth that we've experienced over the last 3 years. And we're doubling, tripling the size of the company annually. Queenstown is the adventure capital of the world. Right, we have 150 plus adventure tourism operators just within a 10-minute drive of where we're sitting right now. Any activity you can think of you'd want to do, you can do it. Bungee jumping was invented here. Jet boating was invented here. I mean, there's so much that happens here. There's so much innovation around the adventure topic that we're really primed well to leverage that. And that's no better place for us to be based.
Be sure to explore more about Werewolf at getwerewolf.com. That's GETWHEREWOLF.com. Welcome back to the Women in Tech Podcast. We are in Auckland, New Zealand after I got to travel the North and South Island celebrating women in tech across the country. It has been absolutely exhilarating. And today we get another fabulous, fabulous entrepreneur. Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead, introduce yourself and tell everybody who you are and a little bit about what you do.
Cool. Hi, everybody. My name is Bro Johnson, and I am the CEO and co-founder of Narrative Muse. And Narrative Muse is an online curated source for women-focused and non-binary books and movies. And what we're in the middle of making, and it is about to go live pretty soon, is we are creating the matchmaker for books and movies. So
Nice. Basically,
that means that we know all about your intimate taste, stuff you tell us, and we'll match you with books and movies that are by or about women and non-binary folk. That's perfect for you.
You know what's funny is, one, did you know there's a film screening tonight of a woman in tech or a woman in, like, some, I'll introduce you to her. There's
cool.
Like this cool, like, women in film, something, I'd probably go to it if I were here.
Okay, cool.
And then two, we ask on every episode, what's your favorite book?
Perfect.
So let's start with that. What's your favorite book?
Oh, man, I hate this question.
Why? Because you have so many.
I read so many books.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me start with a book that has had such a significant impact on me, but I'm sorry to say it. It's not the best writing of all time, but it doesn't matter because it's just the stories are incredible. So it's called The Underground Girls of Kabul.
Yeah.
And it's about girls in Kabul who are born girls, and in Afghanistan, there is a culture where your family is shamed if you don't have any boy sons. And so it is not commonly known that sometimes families will turn their little girls into boys so that they have less shame on their family.
Come on.
And so that they are able to, so that the young girl turns into a son so that she can help her sisters walk freely around town or around the city so that the girls can do their shopping because they're not allowed out of the house without a boy escort.
Yeah.
And so if there aren't men or boys in the family other than the father, it just completely
cripples the family. Yeah.
It means that they're not able to do what they need to do on a daily basis.
Where is this again?
Kabul, in Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan.
Yes. And it's one of the most enlightening, eye-opening stories I've read in years. And I've made my whole team read it because I really love it.
What's it called again?
The Underground Girls of Kabul.
And so the girls, their hair is cut short.
They look like boys. Everything about them. Because they're of an age where they haven't gone through puberty, there's nothing to define them as a boy or a girl. So a lot of young girls, you can just cut their hair off, put boy clothes on them, and you'd never know the difference.
No.
Yeah. And so what's really interesting about the story is it's about these girls who learn what it means to have freedom and learn what it means to be able to walk the world with ease and in safety, and then what happens at the moment just before puberty to these young girls who have been offered every opportunity and now have to return to life as a woman.
No.
When they've never experienced that before, and all of their freedoms are taken away from them. It's a jaw-dropping concept, let alone story, and it's a nonfiction, and so all of the stories in it are real, because they're real.
I have to read this.
It's an amazing book.
Say the title one more time.
The Underground Girls of Kabul.
You have to email it to me. I'm so tired. It sounds so good. I want to read it on the plane. That would be crazy. I should pick it up at a bookstore before I leave.
I'm hoping you can. I'll tell you where you're most likely to find it. Yeah,
wow.
Because it came out a few years ago. So it's one of those books that sometimes you're not going to find on every bookshelf. Obviously, you'll find it on Amazon and Kindle. Don't worry, it's there. But yeah. If you're going to find an actual paper copy.
I could just order it when I get back.
Yeah.
Amazon all the way.
Yeah.
So is this your first foray? I can't talk right
foray.
Now. You get the idea. Into being an entrepreneur?
Yes.
Oh, wow. And how long have you had this company?
So Narrative Muse has been Narrative Muse for about 2 years, so not very long. And I have been on the path for about 3.5 years. So I stopped my day job then and took over a year to figure out what it was I was doing. Yeah.
I mean, at least it only took you like over a year. Some people, we never figure it out.
Fair enough. Do you want some backstory?
Yeah,
about why?
Please.
Okay. So backstory is, so I've been a film and television editor for, at the point that I said, we can do better. I had been a film and television editor for just over 10 years.
Yeah.
And, I knew that I was really disappointed with the content that I'd been editing, but I didn't really know why. And in New Zealand's quite different from the U.S., so I am from the United States originally.
I thought so, but then
But I've been living here for close to 15 years, so it's been a while.
Yeah.
Where
in the U.S.?
I was born in Utah, then I moved to Texas.
What's wrong with Utah?
Well, it's just because I have a long story.
Okay.
So I was born in Utah, then I moved to Texas, then I moved to New Jersey, then I moved to Pennsylvania, and I went to university in California. And then
I knew that if
I was going to work in film and TV, I was going to have to work in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Hollywood and I are not a good cultural fit.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm either going to Vancouver or I'm going to Sydney. And I went to Sydney because it's warmer.
Yeah.
Better weather. And then because of immigration issues, I ended up in New Zealand and it could never have happened better. It's the most perfect outcome ever.
Yay!
But because the difference between New Zealand and Hollywood industries are that when you work in a smaller country, it means you have more opportunity to work on content that's kind of across the board.
Yeah.
So if you work in Hollywood, you get kind of stuck in, say, documentary, or you get stuck in comedy, or you get stuck in sitcom, or you get stuck in whatever genre.
Yeah.
Whereas here in New Zealand, because the industry is small enough, you can actually be quite successful working across all of the genres.
Nice.
Which is what I was. So in New Zealand, they say tall poppy syndrome, you should never toot your own horn. But I just think to give you a bit of context, I was really successful in all the genres and actually was doing quite well. So I had the opportunity to see what was really being made and work on some pretty high quality stuff. But I knew something was wrong. And I wasn't comfortable with all the content I was working on. And this tragic thing happened in my life that made me throw all of the cards up in the air and say, I quit for a while. I'm not happy with what's happening here. I'm not happy with life in general at the moment, and I don't know why. So I went to Vancouver. because I thought, well, I never did Vancouver. Yeah. I mean, that was always part of the story. I was supposed to go and work in Vancouver. So I went there. And then I thought to myself, if I had the opportunity to be given the job as an editor at any television studio or on any series or in any movie here in Vancouver, would I want to work on any of these projects? And the answer was no, but I didn't know why. And I thought I was just being kind of all uppity and just like, maybe I've set the bar too high. Maybe that's what's going on. Yeah. And so I was in a house sit and I kind of just sat with that thought for a little while and just started scanning through. It was on television at the time. And this was 2014 and it was before the zeitgeist, third or fourth wave of feminism, where everyone's talking about how we didn't have representation and blah. And the conversation hadn't really started yet about lack of representation on screens. And so I was flipping through the channels and I realized, oh, I'm not there. I'm not on the screen.
Yeah.
And the only thing I saw that I wanted to watch was something with Maggie Gyllenhaal. I realized I wasn't represented on the screen, and I was like, we can do better. As an entire industry, we can do better. And I know I'm one person, but surely I can do something to change the entertainment landscape, because this just isn't feeling good. And so I came back to New Zealand, which I thought was a layover.
Yeah.
I thought I was laying over for a short time before I was going to go back to Sydney. And instead, I haven't left. I'm still here laying over. And I found the co-founder of Narrative Muse. And basically what we wanted to do was we wanted to do something that was going to showcase films and books. Books came part of the larger picture after a whole bunch of research I had done about what the problem was and what the landscape looked like and why it was happening and why are there no women in leadership and why are there no women in politics and blah. And it became really clear to me that the problem is we have a problem in literature as well. And books and movies are pretty easy tie together. And I'm so happy we made that choice. And essentially we thought, how do we move the needle to make sure that there's more content that is surfacing in our radars or on our radars when we're out looking for something to read or something to watch. Because at the moment, that stuff, you don't even know it's there because a lot of this content tends to have smaller marketing budgets, so it's hard to find it. And so I'm not going to tell you about what we have right now. You're more than welcome to look at our site, which is narrativemuse.co. But the matchmaker that we're making, which is the special recommendation engine that's just for you, is the thing that we're most excited about showcasing content by and about women and now non-binary folk as well, because they don't have a place.
And what's the user experience?
The user experience is this. Basically, when you come to the site, I'm FYI, it is not live. Everything that we've been doing or everything I'm about to talk about is all the testing that we've done with beta offline, but it's about to be online. So the user experience is that you come online and we ask you, it's basically like going to dating website.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you go onto Tinder's not like this, but if you've ever been on OkCupid, when you go onto OkCupid, the first thing it does is it asks you 5 questions about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you like dirty, like clean house or dirty house?
Yeah.
Do you like pets? Don't like pets. We're doing the same thing. So we're basically saying, how do you want to feel when you read or watch whatever? So you choose book, movie, whatever. How do you want to feel while you're watching it? What kind of characters, like, are you excited about? What kind of topics are really interesting for you? And is there anything that you really want to avoid? Do you want to avoid sexual violence? Do you want to avoid violence in general or harm to children or whatever? And if your answer is no, I don't want any of that, then we'll make sure you won't get any of it. And then we have content curators around the world. We have a team of 35 people.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we are curating the best stuff. We've literally read or watched it all. And if we think...
I was going to say, how do you accumulate that much data?
We read and watch it all. And if we loved it, we put it on the list. So it's kind of like when you go to that old school, this doesn't exist anymore, but when you went to the video shop and it had like the pics from shot people.
Yeah.
It's basically that.
Wait, first of all, how do you manage a team of 35? Are they ambassadors?
Are they ambassadors? Yeah, they're ambassadors. I'd say that.
How do you manage them?
How do we manage them? They love it. They love working with us. How do we manage it? We start with Slack. Everyone uses Slack. That's where our community is, a central community. We're all on different time zones, so it's tough. For instance, last weekend, me and Teresa, the co-founder of Narrative Muse, had an Ask Us Anything session. So we just went online with all of us in a Zoom channel. And everyone kind of popped up who wanted to be there that day, and they could ask me and Teresa anything they wanted.
Wait, does Zoom integrate with Slack?
It probably does.
But you just use Zoom.
Zoom. Yeah. And so it was just a whole bunch of us in the same space at the same time. Them chatting to us chatting to them. We know everyone intimately. So everyone who's part of Narrative Muse is like a brother or sister to me. I know if they've just broken up with someone, I know.
All 35 people?
All of
them. That's amazing.
I know if they're going through a big life event or a big change, or I know what their ups, what their highs and what their lows are. And actually, to answer the question, if you want to know why I believe we've been successful with this team, is because we know each other really intimately. Or maybe I should say that I know them quite intimately, and the editors who edit all of the writing know all of them quite intimately. So, there's just a few touch points for people to go to and have real life conversations about. So it's not just go and curate stuff and write about it and whatever. It's real humans having real conversations. Plus we all really love books and movies.
How does it make money? How does it sustain itself?
Great question. Our first business model was shit. So sorry, am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, it's a podcast. And I think that everybody's business model was and probably still is shit most of the time. Yeah,
In New Zealand, you can swear. Like at any time on the air.
I always swear, period.
But in America, it's different. So I'm like, I don't know what the rules are.
Oh, you can swear on TV here.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I didn't know that. I haven't watched any television. Yeah. Well, very little. Yeah.
And so that's why I was like, no, I don't know what the rules are.
Podcast, Apple. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, I guess, Apple. So our first business model was shit. Basically, we came into this with our big bright eyes of we're going to change the world, and we created something that was pretty not awesome. It's what the website currently is, which is right now we're basically like a curated catalog of really great stuff. And we didn't think through what that model was enough. Basically, we were just going into it because we were like, the world needs this. Yay. But now with the matchmaker, the business model is quite different. So it kind of does two things. One is the people who are responsible for giving you your books and movies, and I haven't explained why we're not doing television. Let me take a side.
Okay, I'm just gonna,
story.
Yes.
The reason we're not doing television just yet, and we will, the reason we're not yet is because the business models around books and movies are nearly identical. Television is very, very different. So when you are looking for, from the user's point of view, for you guys, when you go and you look for movies or TV, you're on Netflix and you're searching, there's no difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
You're like, whatever, they're the same thing. But with movies, the most important moment in a movie's life is when it first gets into the cinema. And it's really important for audiences to go and pay for that ticket and sit their butt in the seat.
Yeah.
Because that's when they're paying the most money for that thing.
Yeah.
And even though we all think that it should all be free now and we think, screw the man shouldn't get our money, they already have $200 million. The truth is that $200 million, although it seems like a crazy number to you, that every single one of those dollars is responsible for getting that movie to you.
Yeah.
So it took every single one of those $200 million to make that movie in the first place and to put enough money into the marketing budget so you even know that the movie exists. So there is no man who's earning all the money.
Yeah.
If anything, there are people who are losing money left, right, and center, and we're very soon not going to have a film industry that looks like it does now.
No.
Because there's no money in it anymore. There's almost no money in it. It's like...
That's a whole other conversation.
It's a whole different conversation, but it's not looking so good. So you are going to continue to have movies, but it's going to be so different into the future.
It will be like Netflix and Amazon produced stuff.
Exactly. So everything that you know, all of those other film producers, so...
like Iron Man or whatever, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, all we're going to see from now on for a long time is all of those really high-grossing films where they know that the average... They know that they're going to get a really wide spread of audience. So it's...
So the comic book ones will do well.
Yeah, it's everything that's spectacular and big and boom. That's the stuff that pulls in wider audiences.
Yeah.
And the film companies are taking no risks anymore on smaller indie or
like
medium
About a
films.
Boy.
Yeah, not making them. They just don't.
Like, that's an amazing film.
I actually haven't seen it yet. When you spend your whole life reading and watching movies, there's just a lot to say.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And when you're growing a company, you also don't have as much time.
Yeah.
I
feel you on that.
But I haven't fully answered the question of why we haven't done TV yet. So the way that TV works, so movies work where you have a pocket of money that makes a TV show, or not a TV show, makes the movie, and then the movie gets made, and then you find a distributor, and then it goes into cinemas. That's exactly the same with books. Books are nearly identical in the way that they work, where you have a writer who writes a book, it gets bought by the book publisher, the book publisher finds a distributor, it finds its way to your hands.
Yeah.
TV is quite different, where you have a production company that decides that it's going to make a pilot, and then that pilot might have the opportunity to be seen by an audience, and then the network might decide that it wants to pick up this pilot.
Yeah.
And then the ownership of the product is now in the hands of the network and the production company.
Yeah.
And the network, I guess the way to best support that piece of content is to get eyeballs on screen. So that's something we could definitely help with. But for us to find a way to be able to get in and, I suppose, have a cut of the whole process so that Nerd Muse can stay alive is harder, essentially, than it is with books and movies. But in the not-so-distant future, we will have TV as well. That was a huge segue.
Wait, but sustainability... How?
Oh, now back to business model. So there are two pieces to the pie, or to the whole picture, for Narrative Muse. So there are our users, and they're the ones who are finding cool content and being recommended awesome stuff, and they're dating their content. And they're the ones that we need as many folk as possible to find cool stuff and go and read and watch stuff.
Yeah.
Because if we can have as many people as possible reading and watching stuff and hopefully paying for it, then we can do our bit in having impact and actually having more women authors and more women filmmakers actually have their stuff read and watched, right? That's one side. The other side of the piece is the distributors. So the people who have something to be gained for you actually reading and watching stuff is distributors. Yeah. So in our case, book and movie distributors want you to go to the cinema and buy as many tickets as possible, or they want you to download the movie on iTunes or Amazon. They don't love you being on Netflix because it means they're making almost no money.
Right.
But if we can support distributors to get to you getting to the content as soon as possible, the better. Now, what we know through Narrative Muse is we're learning heaps about audience is taste.
Yeah.
So we're learning about what you're interested in and what kind of mood you want to be in, what kind of genres you like, what kind of topics you like. So what we're doing is we're working with distributors to better understand who you are so that they can do a better job to find you and to let you know that stuff is available. So that part of the business model is we evaluate all of the content for the distributors in the same way that we do for the users, and we tell the distributors everything that they need to know to better understand how to find you, the audience. That's what it is.
May the force be with you.
Thanks.
It's hard. Where are you? Where, like, when are you launching? Like, what can we do as a community to support you and your success to accelerate you forward?
What you can do is go on the website right now and sign up. It's right at the top of the page.
Can you spell it out for us?
Yes. So narrativemuse.co. So it's NARRATIVEM as in master, use.co. And at the top of the page, you'll see a place where it says to sign up to be part of matchmaking. And once you've done that, then you'll be helping us out by being matched with cool stuff. And tell your friends, obviously, if they are avid book or movie lovers, tell them to get on board. And that's how you can help, really.
How can people connect with you online?
Oh, I'm not very good at Twitter. You can.
Or like email, even. Yeah, whatever you feel comfortable with.
Email, I'm totally happy for you to email me. My email is bro. I have such an unusual name. It's spelled BROUGH.Johnson, JOHNSON, at narrativemuse.co. I'm always happy to take emails and I respond to everything. There's that, or you can find me on Twitter, which is Bro Johnson. That's my handle.
But you don't really use it.
I just don't use it heaps. Yeah.
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 And what's your favorite tech tool?
Favorite. I guess I have to say we use Slack on a daily basis. So Slack. I have to admit that Slack might be at the top of the list. It drives our team crazy though, sometimes. It's almost too accessible. It makes everyone almost too accessible to each other at all times, which means you get really distracted.
It's so funny because that was their whole thing about email. Slack makes it so you don't have to be on email anymore, so you don't get distracted. And now it's like
the most Slack distracting is email. Tool.
Yeah.
And all of everyone who's part of Narrative Muse. Oh, that's the other thing too, is if you're someone who's super into reading and watching stuff, we're looking for curators or evaluators and writers. So cool. If that's something you're into, you'll see that up on the site, quite soon. And otherwise email me if you're interested. But yeah, I'd say we use that tool more than any tool, even though.
And you talked about Zoom, so that was cool.
Yeah, we do use Zoom.
And we'll include all this in the show notes. What's one huge challenge that you've overcome successfully, and what did you learn from it?
I was just talking to someone about this morning. Do you know the biggest challenge? Sorry, we have noise in the background there.
It's okay. We're in a car in a parking lot in the world.
We are.
It happens.
It's like any car anywhere. Just imagine that environment. That's where we are. The biggest challenge literally is the challenge that we all face constantly, which is the belief that we can't do it anymore. There's always a day that comes at some point where you have the ultimate trifecta of badness, like, hit you, of maybe someone's given you some advice that you just don't want to hear, and they're basically telling you that something's not going to work. Maybe you're having problems at home. Maybe you're something's happened to your cat or your dog. And it's just like all of the things combined mean that you don't feel like you have the capacity to continue on. And then as a founder or while working in startup land at all, honestly, you are just constantly being pushed to your limits. So you're regularly being told by your mind and your body and your spirit that you can't do it because you're just tired and you actually don't have any more information and you have no idea what the next step is. And so when you hit that wall, which we all do, it's just the belief in yourself that you've had this experience before and you always climb over the wall and it's gonna be okay, but it really hurts right now. But if you just go home and get some sleep and refuse to look at your emails for like a couple days, or you take a mental health day, like I was just talking about,
mental health days are
so important. And you actually have a real mental health day. You don't have like a pretend one where you just sit on your couch and still do emails like I always want to do.
Oh my God. Yes.
You have to take a real one. You have to stop everything and go touch nature with your feet, or you have to go get some exercise, or you have to eat real food. I tend to eat real food anyway, but you just have to like focus on actually eating the meal properly instead of racing through it. And just self-care, because when you have those lows, they suck, but you always get through it. You just have to believe you'll get through it.
Totally. One last question, usually that I ask at the beginning, so we kind of did a reversal today. When did you first realize you were passionate about technology?
Oh, wow. I was never passionate about technology. I didn't care. I've never cared. I guess I have to change the way I sit with that now is
you don't have to change, but you do have a tech company.
We have a tech company. So to say passion is the wrong use of the words for me. Instead, I would say that me and my co-founder laugh all the time when we're like, how the hell did we end up in a data company, because ultimately we're a data company. So if you're telling us about your taste and what's really interesting to you, we need to be able to serve up books and movies that are perfect for you. But to do that, we have to have all the data about the books and the movies, and we have to have all the data about your taste. And so that means that, oh my God, we're a data company. How did this happen?
Yeah.
Teresa is a screenwriter, writer, and I am a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So both of us come from these backgrounds that have absolutely nothing to do with tech, and now we're in tech, and we're catching up quickly. I 100% see the value in it. I understand. I can, like, you see instant results, and you can see, oh my goodness, with tech, we can actually touch people in a way that we never could before. But at the end of the day, for me, passion around tech, it's just kind of like, it's the tools that we use. The passion is behind the impact we want to see in the world.
And it's almost like my waitressing job. I used to get really upset that I didn't like waitressing at all, but I waitressed for a long time. And my mom would be like, it's just a resource to get you to where you want to go.
Totally. Spot on. And it's exactly that. It is a resource. And every day I'd say that I appreciate the resource more and more. And every day I'm sitting on meetings. Like, I just had a meeting with one of our data scientists today where he was talking through some things to a junior engineer. And I was astounded. Like, he was writing all this code on the board and explaining all of these high level principles. And I knew everything he was talking about. And I was like, when did I become someone who had any idea, like, what any of that code is or what those, like, principles are? And yet here I am completely immersed in it, following along, going, yep. And not only that, but telling him when he's missing stuff. Like, just like, so hey, cool. We've missed that thing and that thing and that thing. It's important that this new junior understands that. So can we cover that a bit more thoroughly? And I'm just like, what happened? I don't understand. But
so cool.
I guess the point is if we care enough about anything, we can learn it, right? And we can catch up. And you're never, ever on the back foot. Truly, because we're always learning. And if you want it, then you'll get there. Yeah, I don't know how many of these tech listeners are people who are just interested in the world of tech, but aren't necessarily doers of tech. But
that's the thing. I don't know either, because it's a whole bunch of people that I haven't met, but hello, because you know me more than I know you. But no, I think your story is really inspiring, because there are so many people that are like you that do want to pursue what their passion is outside of tech, and they're utilizing technology in a way, or they need to utilize technology in a way to get them there. And so to hear your story is really inspiring, that you don't actually have to be a classic engineer, programmer, woman in tech to be the founder of a tech company.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to have your number one passion be tech.
Nope.
To utilize tech to build a tech company, but you can still be a woman in tech.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Love
absolutely.
It. Thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast.
You're welcome.
On that note, if you guys want to connect and collaborate with more extraordinary women around the world, be sure to connect with them on the Facebook group, the Women in Tech Facebook group. You get there by going to womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Also, if you want the sticker, I give you the sticker. Yeah, you have the sticker on your computer already.
Yeah.
She has the Women in Tech sticker. If you want one of the Women in Tech stickers, tweet us, Instagram us, Facebook us at Women in Tech Show. I will see you guys, talk to you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today.
The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.